you know, I come from what I describe as the Denver lineage. So people that that Gary worked with, people that Don P worked with, worked with me, and so I have nothing but the highest regard and respect for Denver and you know, Gary was there in the beginning, and I cannot tell you how much I appreciate the work that he's done. So with that, steps 6, 7, 8, and 9, Marty, is that what you want me to
do? Yeah, buddy. Just those few.
All right. So let's say I've conceded to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic, and I know a bit about what being an alcoholic is, you know, the descriptions, the references in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I truly can buy in and say, you know what, that's me. And I've come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity, can put some of these pieces of my life back together. I don't know what that looks like right now, but you know, I'm willing to believe, and I'm willing to move forward, and I make a decision in the third step, and that decision is to seek a connection with this power greater than myself, to go through the rest of the steps, and to try to find a way to be rid of this bondage of self, the manifestations of self that have defeated me. And there's great descriptions in, I think it's page 60 to 62, where it talks about me being the actor wanting to run the whole show. You know, the funny thing is, when I first read that, I didn't identify. And today, I don't think you could describe me better than an actor who wants to run the whole show. And there's all kinds of material in there that leads me to believe that, you know, guess what, Marty? I might have been wrong about a bunch of stuff. And I start to move into a four-step inventory. Understanding that various forms of self really are the critical problem in my life. I need to inventory some of the major areas of self that are defeating me, and certainly resentment is one of them. I cannot tell you how pissed I was at everything and everybody. You know, my life didn't look very good around the time I was getting sober. You know, I don't know about anybody else, but I was living at home with Mom. You know, I'd become near unemployable. There were states that were trying to find me because the computers were coming online, you know, and I was getting letters like fleeing to avoid prosecution. And it, you know, life had become bleak. I love Bill Wilson's descriptions. They seem dated, you know, when you first, the shivering denizen of alcohol's bad realm, you know, I mean, but that's really what I was. I was drinking at that point in time just for oblivion. And I come out of this whole thing and I'm pissed. You know, I don't like you. I don't like my boss, my family, you know, the cops, society. I mean, there was nothing I wasn't mad at. And you know, you can't live that way. I mean, that's corrosive to any type of quality of life, or spiritual growth. And another thing is, I had to inventory fear my understanding of fear at that time was based on like John Wayne movies and stuff. So listen, I was willing to push the saloon doors open and meet you in the road with handguns. I was completely willing to do that. So I didn't think I had any fear. but fear was, it took the form of massive anxiety. I was uncomfortable with people. I was uncomfortable with jobs. I was uncomfortable in relationships. I just didn't want to be right here, right now with you, you know, and for years I had dodged and weaved and disappeared and not shown up and started things I never finished. And it all had to do with this anxiety, this self-centered fear that they describe in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had to inventory that, right? And another area that I really fell short on was, you know, listen, I'm a human being. I have regular human feelings sometimes, and I start to care about people. And there were some relationships that I got in, and you know, I really did like these women. And listen, if you would have asked me the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, Chris, what do you think of women? I would have said, they're crazy. You can't trust them. You know, they leave you when you need them the most, you know, and I really would have believed that. And then I do the relationship inventory, and I start going through all the questions for all the relationships, and I start to see, oh man, you know, they would have been crazy to stay. And I have no skills, you know, I have rendered myself permanently single with my attitudes and my behavior. And I started to see the truth of all these things. Now, you know, here's the thing, recognizing the problem does not offer the power to overcome it. In and of itself, the knowledge of a problem is not sufficient to be able to solve it. If you're an alcoholic and you're trying to solve resentment, fear, and shame and stuff like that, right? But I recognized it all, and I went to my sponsor, and I had this you know, notebook, and I remember going up to her like, Phil, I'm gonna read my inventory. You know, I was all ashamed, and like, you know, my head was down. And I remember I read all this stuff to my sponsor, the whole thing. And it was imperfect. It wasn't even adequate, probably. But the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know, we don't get graded, you know, on this stuff. We get a pass fail based on our willingness and our action, you know. And so maybe it was a bad fifth step. I certainly wouldn't accept one like that from somebody today. But you know what it did? You know what it did? It moved me. It moved me forward as far as the recovery process was concerned. I was making forward progress. And I remember my sponsor saying, after I got done reading all this, and I'm like, oh my God, he's not going to drive me home. You know, he had driven me to the park. This is bad, you know? And he kind of chuckles a little, and he goes, you know, that's not so bad. You know, we can work with that. And I'm like incredulous, you know, are you kidding me? You know, do you want me to read it to you again slower? I thought it was just, you know, unforgivable stuff. And he goes, no, he goes, listen, Chris, here's what I believe. He goes, here's what I believe. This is my personal belief. He goes, I believe you were an alcoholic before you started drinking. You know, you were an alcoholic before you started drinking. So he goes, think about a burnout campfire where the coals are like red and smoldering and stuff. It's like a smoldering, you know, campfire. when you put alcohol, when you started drinking alcohol, it was like throwing gasoline on that campfire. And it just, the flames like flew up in the air and burnt you and everybody near you. Now you're making an effort right now to recover from alcoholism. You know, lighten up on yourself a little. And I remember coming out of that park, with my head held, you know, eye to eye with them. And it was significant. Now I said before, it's my experience that recognizing I'm selfish, recognizing I'm quick to anger and sensitive and immature and all these things, recognizing those things, that's not the recipe to solve all this stuff. You know what I mean? It's not going to offer you the solution out of this. So I come to step six. Now, you know, my first exposure to step six was, well, that's kind of cute. You know, you ask God to take care of all this stuff for you. That's kind of cute, but you know, I'm actually going to get to work on some of this stuff. and that's kind of my first impression of this step. Today, my impression is different. And you got to understand, the spiritual life's not a theory. It's a way of life. So I'm going to have a perspective on steps 6, 7, 8, 9 right now, in this moment, that I may not have a year from now, and I may not have had last year. You know, there's growth and there's broadening and deepening my understanding of this work every time I go through it. So understand that I'm sharing my current experience and understanding of these steps. Now, in step six, it says, become willing to have God remove these defects of character. Become willing. So willingness. Now, coming out of a fifth step, I'm usually fairly willing for, you know, the stuff that's causing me problems, the stuff that's, you know, really aggravating, the stuff that's impacting my quality of life. You know, I'm willing. But these steps really, really ask us to be willing to have God, you know, remove the good and the bad, if that's going to be God's will. My belief about what is good and my belief about what is bad has completely changed in the last number of years that I've been sober. The things that I used to think are good today, I don't think are really good today. And and some of the things that I thought were bad were actually some of the real catalysts for me moving forward in my life. So I can be wrong about the good and I can be wrong about the bad. So how about I become willing to have God be in charge of this? Now, it almost seems like a cop-out. I have identified all these character defects, all this stuff. It's the whole megillah of my failure at life. And I'm just going to, you know, become willing to have God remove them. And then I'm going to humbly ask God to remove them. You know, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Because that's all there is. Because the power of God is the only thing I'm experienced with that can move me forward. The self-help books didn't ever help. You know, I mean, trying to develop my spiritual condition with a self-help book is like trying to stop a semi with a cobweb. You know what I mean? Like, I had them all too. My sponsor came over my house one time. I was about 8 months sober. He comes in, he surprised me, like knocked on the door. Like, did I do something wrong? You know, not sure. I wasn't used to him, you know, just showing up at the house. And he came up to my room, and I got the bookcases, right? I got The Joy of Resentment, and, you know, When Friends Through Intimidation. I mean, I got every self-help book you've ever seen in your life, right? And he's sitting there holding his chin, and he's going through all the titles. And he's like, wow, you got a lot of self-help books here, Chris. I'm kind of proud. I'm like, yeah, felt good. And he goes, can I ask you something? And I go, sure, Phil, what? He goes, can you show me where your Help Others books are? And I went, I'm unfamiliar with that category, Phil. You know, where would I find those? So you know, he was wonderful at, you know, the irony of, you know, of my stupidity. But anyway, so step six, you know, become willing to have God remove these defects of character. Yeah, because that's it. That's all. You know what I mean? And humbly ask God to remove these defects of character. Humbly ask God to remove these defects of character. Absolutely. Now, my level of humility, my level of willingness is up for debate in some of these things, but, you know, I gotta keep plugging along. I gotta keep moving forward. And it's, you know, this is the long game for me. You know what I mean? Like I gotta stay on the playing field, and I gotta keep putting in an effort for the long haul. I really do. Let me go to the book, because that always helps. Hold on a second. Okay. You know, when it talks about step seven here, it says, we say something like this. So I really think he's trying to tell us to be authentic and to personalize this particular prayer, because we're trying to develop a personal relationship with God as we're moving through all these. So as my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad, all good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Not every single defect of character that's causing me problems, you know, the things that are blocking me off from being useful to God. This is really asking to be placed on God's team. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step seven, period. Okay. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I thought, you know, there's going to be some follow up work in this. You know, I got to list out all my defects of character and put a graph together, you know, with a timeline and an action plan. No, we have then completed step seven, end of sentence. What I'm supposed to do now is I'm supposed to take my attention and place it on step eight, which is putting a list of the people and the institutions together that the various manifestations and forms of self and character defects have damaged or harmed. I am to put a list together and become willing to make direct amends. Now, another thing that I learned that came out of the Denver lineage that I'm really grateful for is, and it's just a mechanical piece of this. It doesn't really make any difference as far as the heart of the step. But I was taught to use index cards for my A step. So on the index card, I put the person or institution, and I try to get as accurate as I possibly can with the harm. You know, I don't want to say something like, I was never there for them, or I acted like a jerk. I want it to be more, more focused and more accurate as far as what the harm, what kind of a harm did I cause? And I put that on the card. I put their phone number or their address, or, you know, however I'm going to make an approach. And I make sure that I do that. And then I meet with someone who has some experience with Mets. You know, because I can have so many things wrong, my thinking can be so tangled at times. I can have so many things wrong. I find it very, very important to, if I've put a full-blown inventory together and I've got a bunch of A-step cards, I find it very, very useful to go to somebody who has experience actually making amends. They're a smaller percentage of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous than I would wish for, but I need to go to them and cover the harm, cover what my thought for the approach would be. Talk about, you know, what an amend would look like. Is it going to be money? Is it going to be recognizing with them that I was wrong? Is it going to be an apology? You know, what is it going to look like? And talk that over with someone. Now, why I've done that is I've got some experience with some of the people that I've worked with over the years who've kind of jumped the gun with amends. They've gone from step one to step nine, you know, to try to put the fire out, and that can really cause a lot of trouble. I've seen a lot of damage done because of someone just taking their own counsel on this, reading the step off the wall, deciding exactly how it should be, it should be implemented and with who, and then running off and doing that. And so I make it very, very clear when I'm working with somebody that we're going to go over your A-step cards. I don't want you making one amends, you know, until we go over your A-step cards. And I just personally do that because, I've seen some damage when someone doesn't have any collaborative spiritual wisdom, to draw from. So anyway, now I've got a list. Now, you know, here's what I really believe. I believe that I have had an emotional and a spiritual illness for a long, long time. And I've treated that emotional and spiritual illness with massive quantities of George Dickel bourbon or Gordon's vodka. It seemed to work temporarily. Okay. So I've separated from alcohol now. I still have emotional and spiritual illness. I that's what resentment is. That's what self-centered fear is. That's what shame and guilt and remorse and all that stuff is. And I'm inundated with that stuff. I believe that I could try 100 different things. I could try therapy. I could try primal scream therapy. I could try all kinds of things to try to come to terms with my shame and my guilt and my remorse. Luckily for me, I was inspired by some of the people who came out of Denver. I was inspired by those folks to actually do these steps. Now, here's the funny thing. I bet every single one of us on this Zoom call at one point in time or another said to themselves, I understand that step, but I don't really think it's going to be necessary in my case. Okay. And I would think that a whole lot. But because I was connected with these people who were keeping an eye on me and wanted to know if I made that amends, even though I wasn't really convinced it was going to be necessary, because I was inspired by these guys, I actually went out and did these amends. I saw the stack of cards go like this down to the last one, and I was able to rip up the last one. Now, I'll tell you from my personal experience, the shame, the guilt, the remorse that I had over all the damage that I had done. I was not immune to the damage I did to other people. When I let people down, I let myself down. When I hurt other people, I hurt me. It's just, that's just the way it is with alcoholism. And I showed up just broken. My spirit was broken, and I was inundated with waves of guilt. And I would think of things that I had done in the past, and I'd be sitting there like, maybe in a DWI class or something, trying to get my license back. And I would think of some horrible thing that I did, when I was drunk. I'd have a physical reaction. I'd go like this. Oh, and people would go, "Are you all right? Are you all right?" I was just thinking about some of the things in my past. I was inundated with this stuff. Now, I'll tell you, there's no action I've ever taken in my life that was more significant than actually going out and making amends, as it impacted my emotional health. That's the 8 and 9 were so fundamentally responsible for me being, peaceful today and relatively serene and really grateful for being on this planet. Those steps really, really were the catalyst for that change, that emotional and that spiritual change. Now, it blows my mind. When I look back about, I look into the history a little bit, Marty and some of us were talking about the history before the meeting. And I made the statement that, accuracy is overrated. When you're looking at Alcoholics Anonymous history, it's more about the story. Right. And it kind of really is. But the Oxford group, and how the Oxford group influenced Bill Wilson and Bob Smith, and how the 12 steps were built up around some of these Oxford group practices, which were built up around some of the first century Christian spiritual principles that you can find in the New Testament, and how it all kind of coalesced into what Bill Wilson wrote down in How It Works and Into Action. It's the story of how that happened is fascinating to me. How these alcoholics from Akron and how these alcoholics from New York started practicing these basically religious spiritual actions and exercises, found ones that worked, found ones that didn't work, and then built the 12 steps. I truly believe today that the 12 steps are a perfect, perfect recovery program. Now the 12 step fellowships and the 12 steps get a lot of criticism out there, from different people, from the people who treat us professionally, from all kinds of stuff, even people who came to AA and it didn't work for them. There's a lot of criticism for it, but you will never find somebody criticizing AA who has actually done these steps. You will find people that will criticize AA who sat around in the meetings and didn't get better, or people who read the steps off the wall and, you know, and was forced to put those steps up on the wall and they were a counselor or something. You know, you're never going to find somebody who has true experience with these 12 steps that are not going to share with you how remarkable these particular steps are when they're actually taken in somebody's life. Now in Alcoholics Anonymous, where I got sober, it was Northern New Jersey, 1989, 1990, and the big book movement, let's just call it that. You know, some people say it, with respect. Some people, say it with disdain, you know, the big book movement. But it wasn't a vital thing in North Jersey when I got sober. You had a lot of discussion meetings. You had some step meetings where people discussed the theories of the steps. You know, you had some speaker meetings where people told their drunkologues a lot. But it wasn't like it is today. In this day and age, almost anywhere you go, it wouldn't be hard for you to find a sponsor who'd be willing to sit down with you and explain to you how you do the steps, why you do the steps, what are some of the results that you're going to get from the steps. But when I got sober, that's not, you know, the way it was. It really had turned into a fellowship of sobriety with an occasional program of recovery if you happen to be hardcore. You know, in the earlier days of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was a program of recovery with a support fellowship. Like, the fellowship really was the vehicle to get everybody together and enthusiastic about actually taking these steps. So Alcoholics Anonymous has gone through periods of time up and down where it's just changed. The fellowship grew so much that I think the fundamentals, you know, were dropped out of a lot of people's hands. But today there's like a renaissance going on. There's book studies everywhere. There's experienced people everywhere. There's people sharing about, you know, the spiritual awakening that they've had as the result of the 12 steps everywhere. And that really, really is a good thing. But when I went about actually making my amends, it was not something that a lot of people were used to in the meetings I was going to. Remember, I got inspired by people from the Denver area on tapes. You know what I mean? Years later, I got to meet some of these heroes. I got to meet Gary, and, you know, a bunch of these people, and I'm incredibly grateful. But in the early 90s, it was cassette tapes that I was listening to, and I was getting inspired by these guys who were working a program. And so I basically start working a program in meetings where people really weren't doing that. if someone was going to share about the ninth step in meetings that I was going to back then, you know, they'd say something like, "Hey, and I apologize to the old lady, and she didn't really take it very well." You know, I mean, that, you know, that would be the share. You know what I mean? And so basically what happened in my world was I started to sponsor people, and I started to take people through the steps, and a fellowship grew up, you know, in the Burnsville, New Jersey area. A fellowship grew up, and people that I sponsored started to take up people through the steps, and they took people through the steps, and there was a change. And this was going all over the country. I think many people were being inspired by by Denver. You can't shake a stick without finding somebody somewhere that was you can't shake a stick without hitting somebody that was, you know, influenced by people that came out of that that cauldron of recovery. So today, you know, today it's orthodox to actually make your amends. You know, I used to hear stuff like, well, it says accept and harm then or others and I'm others. I mean, you used to hear just crap like that, right? And you know, in today's day and age, I think we'll have the opportunity to be influenced much more easily than I was influenced by people who have recovery experience. Now, here's the thing about the 12 steps and the spiritual awakening that I believe. You know, I believe that they create an awakened spirit. You know, the spiritual awakening is an awakened spirit. I'm awake today. I see things as they really are. Prior to going through these 12 steps, I cannot say that. I had, you know, my old ideas, many of them were wrong. Most of them were wrong. And these were ideas that they were mine. So I kind of liked them. You know what I mean? And I would try to align myself with people who were like-minded. You know, oh, you think that too? We're both right. But you get through these 12 steps and they render you open-minded. And there is an awakening that happens. And today, you know, I see step 8 and 9 as a freedom, a freedom step. You know, do I want to remain in bondage to self and shame and guilt? Or do I want to take a simple spiritual action that might be a little embarrassing or a little anxiety causing and get free of that forever? You know, so I see it clearly like that today. As I was moving into the amends, I had old ideas. And what the old ideas looked like was this. Well, I know I've done 10 amends and they've all worked out really well, but the 11th is going to suck. You know, that's my old ideas. That's my old belief systems that I'm going to look bad, or they're going to throw me in jail, or, you know, whatever, or this isn't going to work for me. Well, you know, in step 3, I've made a decision to do this stuff. In step 7, I've asked God to take away the things that block me off from God. So by the time I get to step 9, I really should have the inner wherewithal to step out and make these amends. You know, if I've done my job. Now there's promises everywhere. You know, there's promises everywhere in the book. Every action step in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, has just a huge set of remarkable, extraordinary promises in them. And, you know, the ninth step promises are pretty good. You know, knowing a new freedom and a new happiness, not regretting the past. You know, how about that? How about not regretting the past? That's a big one. When I walked through the doors of AA, do you have any idea how many things I would have changed if I had a time machine? I would have changed my whole life. You know, it was just unsatisfactory at every level. I look back on those early years of bitter alcoholic struggle as something that fitted me to be available to the spiritual life I have today. So I don't regret them. I think every every crazy situation, every mistake that I made, every embarrassing, pathetic, you know, ridiculous thing that I did that I was ashamed of and everything. All, I don't know that I would have walked in to a spiritual program of action that demands this type of rigorous honesty. I don't think I would have waltzed into it. You know, I would have gone for the Napoleon Hill book, you know, Think and Grow Rich. I wouldn't have picked the 12 steps as a way of life. So something needed to move me into that. And it was my alcoholism and the resulting damage, you know, that was caused from my alcoholism. Now, I want to share a couple of experiences that I had with the ninth step that were really pivotal to me. You know, one of them was I have a niece, and you know, back in the '80s when I was drinking, the families would get together for Thanksgivings and Christmases and all that stuff, right? And I'd be drinking whiskey and just being a jerk. And she really reminded me a lot of me. She was very counterculture, you know, she was kind of goth and kind of like, you know, just, you know, close-minded and she's set in her ways and everybody's stupid. And she just reminded me of me. So I would get really pissed at her. And I would say stuff to her that an uncle should not say to a niece, you know what I mean? And I had a lot of guilt about that. And that certainly made, you know, one of my eighth step cards. And I made an appointment with her. And basically what I did was, you know, I told her where I was wrong. You know, I told her, listen, I'm trying to recover from alcoholism. You know, one of the exercises in that recovery process is to really bear down on, you know, the mistakes I've made and the people that I've hurt and the harms that I've caused. And if you'll allow me, you know, I want to admit some stuff here. And you need to know that I'm wrong. And then I asked the questions that also came out of Denver, the beautiful ninth step questions, which are, my version of them at least, is the first question is, did I leave anything out? You know, like if I'm admitting my faults, you know, sometimes I was a blackout drinker, folks, you know, I got to ask everybody if I left anything out, because I probably left some out that I don't remember. You know, the second was you need to tell me how you felt about all that. You need to talk to me about any of that stuff. And the third question is, you know, what would you have me do to make right this wrong? What can I do to set right this wrong and be real authentic and you know, real humble about all of that. And I did that with her, and all she did was like, you know, she just looked at me like, no one's ever done this before. She was just floored by the whole thing, you know, and she didn't say really much, but, you know, she thanked me and, you know, we went on our way. And about 3 weeks later, I get a phone call. She had tried to commit suicide on drugs and was on the flight deck in a mental hospital. And she was calling me. And she wasn't calling her mother. She wasn't calling her father. She wasn't calling her brother. She was calling me because she thought I would understand. Now, I see that as remarkable. I see that as remarkable. And with some help, I was able to guide her toward, you know, she was somebody that could really benefit from, you know, the counseling and all that stuff. And she did. She, with my encouragement, you know, she went and sought counseling, and, you know, she's got a killer job in Manhattan today. She's doing really good. Now, Now, that's a miracle that I'm somebody that can help with something like that. Back in the day, you were not calling me up saying, hey, we've got, you know, we got a problem over here. We better call Chris. You were not calling me, okay? I was the last person on your list that you were going to seek counsel with. And today that really has changed. I'm like a clearinghouse of counsel. And really, it's not counsel as much as it is the sharing of experience. And I can do that today, and that's an amazing thing. Another promise. Get this promise. This is a nightstand promise. I can be alone at perfect peace and ease. How about that? How about perfect peace and ease? When I was in active alcoholism, I would get home as fast as I could. I'd drive 100 miles an hour. I'd go to the liquor store straight home, big 24-ounce glass with some ice cubes, bourbon, you know, a little bit of Coke on top, start drinking, and I'd go up to my room, and I'd turn the stereo on. I'd turn the TV on. I'd put a guitar in my lap, and I'd be reading a book all at one time because I had to stop my thinking. I couldn't just sit there. There's no way. I'd go crazy. Part of alcoholism is having really tangled thoughts. It's the best way I can describe it. My thoughts are tangled. Tomorrow at work, as far as it's going to be really bad, or, you know, the boss is going to say this, and he's going to say that yesterday, because yesterday he insulted me, and like, all this stuff going on, and I got to go, I got court date coming up, there's a court date coming up, and, you know, I can't believe, you know, this is the stuff that's like churning through my head. So to try to quiet that is the bourbon and the guitar and the TV and the music and trying to read. It's trying to untangle all that, you know, into some form of sanity. And getting sober didn't stop all of that. I would walk into an AA meeting and it'd be like, oh, well, God, there's so-and-so. God, I hope he doesn't share. I can't. Oh, this is a gratitude meeting. I'm walking out. And so I still got all the tangled thoughts in my head. Well, the ninth step is saying I can be alone at perfect peace and ease. You know, it's funny. I got the best wife in the world. You know, some of you know her. She's absolutely the best in the world. But I'll be like sitting there. I'll just be sitting, and she'll walk in. She'll go, "What are you doing?" And I'll go, "Nothing." And she go, "Nothing." You know, I go, "Nothing." Yeah, yeah. I can be. The ninth step promises that I can do nothing. And it's one of my favorite things, right, Marty? Isn't that one of your favorite things? Yeah, he does it with the fishing pole and, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, I can be alone. The voices in my head, the tangled thoughts are I've been restored to sanity. You know, here's the thing. Thing about recovery that is really challenging for many of us is you can't understand a step until you actually experience it. So if you're anything like me, you're going to say, I understand that step. I read it. It's not going to be necessary, you know, but so the only way to understand the insanity is to be restored to sanity. Then you can look back on it. You know, the only way to understand that resentments have been mastered is And what that means and what that's going to feel like and what that's going to look like is for resentments to be mastered. We really understand, looking backward at our recovery, what the hell was going on. And we had to take many, many things on faith, especially in the ninth step and especially in the fifth step. There's some things that we're going to have to take on faith. We're going to have to do these, not really understanding why we have to do them, not really understanding what they're going to do for us. You know, it's our spiritual imperative to do them and to resign from the debating society and just do them. And once you've done them, you look back and you're like, oh, I get it now. And now you start to see the wonderful language in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and it takes on a much deeper meaning, you know, once you're on the experience side of the particular step that you're doing. You know, if you work with me, if you're unfortunate enough, you know, to like mistakenly ask me to sponsor you, you know, I'm gonna have a conversation with you right off the bat. You know, what my expectations are going to be. It's going to all come right out of the chapter working with others. I'm going to expect you to do the fourth and the fifth step. I'm going to expect you to start a prayer and a meditative discipline in your life. I'm going to expect you to go out and make direct amends. Now, you may not think you've got the power to do that. You may not think you can or would have the courage to do that. As long as you say you're willing to be willing to do that, you know, I'll move forward with you because sometimes that's all we got. Be willing to be willing. And I think each step gives us the power to take the next step. That's certainly the way it is in my life today. You know, the consciousness of the presence of God, I understand that today experientially. The consciousness of the presence of God, it's just amazing. And, you know, I'm going to end with this. I'm working with a new sponsor who I just adore. He's more spiritual than Gandhi. You know, I love this guy. And he gives me exercises. He gives me spiritual exercises, which are nice. And you know what's really nice about them? They're simple. I truly believe in the economy of the recovery process today. I think we can complicate a one-car funeral. So give us an inventory and we'll have 700 pages, you know, in 8 months. I mean, you know, look at the example in the book. You know what I mean? So there's an economy to this stuff. So I believe there's an economy to the spiritual life. And I'll share three things that my sponsor has me doing today. And they're unbelievably simple, and I've gotten really great results from them. Okay. First thing he asked me to do, he goes, Chris, whenever you remember, you're walking around outside, whenever you remember, look up. I go, okay. And he goes, no, that's it. Look up. And just look up. You see the sky. We are biological, self-aware entities on this planet Earth. You know, we've been given this opportunity to interact with each other. It's like a big playground. And just look up and be grateful for this world. You know, just look up. And so I do that whenever I remember, which is not a lot, but you know, when I do remember, I do it. Then he asked me, he goes, this is one that he's working on mindfulness with me on this. And he goes, okay, Chris, here's what I want you to do. He goes, I learned this from one of the guys in California, and I do it all the time, and it's great. He goes, okay, let's say you're walking out to your car. Say to yourself, I am now walking out to the car. Say to yourself, I am getting in the car and I'm starting it. Say that you're driving to the grocery store. So in other words, it's an exercise in presence. It's an exercise in the now. You know, what am I doing now? And it's an exercise to keep me in the now, because I got to tell you, all my problems are in the past or the future. There's no problems in the now. So this is an exercise in being present, being mindful of the now. Now here's the one he gave me about a week ago. I don't know about anybody else, but I have difficulty doing some simple tasks, you know, like making a bed correctly instead of just taking a sheet and throwing it like it's a net and I'm trying to catch fish, you know. I mean, there's just certain things that I want to hurry up through so I can get to the next thing. And I don't know why. It's no rush. It's, you know, it's part of my obsessive compulsive ADHD, whatever. Marty would know. He could probably heal me from it. But so he gave me an exercise for this. And he goes, Chris, you know, he manages a large horse farm with a lot of hands and animals and, you know, millions of horses and tractor. I mean, all kinds of stuff going on, you know, it's like one of those ranches. And he goes, Chris, this is what I do. You know, I feel a little resistance toward something I'm about to do. Like maybe I'm a little annoyed or I want to hurry through it or whatever. He goes, I go, God help me. You know, God help me to feed the horses. God help me to check the oil in the tractor. Just simple things like that. Like, and that's an exercise in the consciousness of the presence of God. That's an exercise, like it says in the book, the thy will, not mine be done. These are thoughts that must go with us constantly. So this is like a constantly exercise that relates to the presence of God. Now think about how hard this is. Look up, tell yourself what you're doing and ask God for help. You know, that's pretty complicated. But I found that the spiritual things are much better than like the 1200 page Course in Miracles that I'll never get through. You know what I mean? So I'm an alcoholic. So give me the economy of the spiritual life. And I can't tell you how grateful I am. You know, Marty, thank you for calling on me. I, again, it's very intimidating going after Gary was there the day, you know, the Denver contingent was formed that impacted countless lives. And, you know, so anyway, thank you, Marty. That's all I got.